And you're listening to Loafer's Glory with your host, Utah Phillips, on community radio stations like WORT-FM in Madison, Wisconsin, and KAOS-FM in Olympia, Washington. You can write Utah Phillips at Box 1235, Nevada City, California, the zip code 95959. That's Box 1235, Nevada City, zip code 95959. Or you can call for a complimentary newsletter catalog, 800-989-3825. Loafer's Glory comes with support from the National Hobo Association, the publishers of the Hobo Times, Box 706, Nisswa, Minnesota, 56468, or on the web at www.hobo.org. And support also coming from the Heshan World Fund of the Tides Foundation. We'll return to the second portion of today's show in just a moment.
I know that it's kind of an odd segue to go from Two Strong Arms, Sacco and Vanzetti to the Stone Rag, you know, intermission music with blind Kenny Hall. But damn it, Kenny Hall has struggled all of his life, blind since birth. And he's a true hero of mine. And his music is endowed with such optimism. And that's what I want in the labor movement. That's what I want as one of the fruits of this titanic struggle that's been going on for hundreds of years. I want a feeling of optimism. I want a feeling of hope. I refuse to live without hope. By the way, the singer on that song, Two Good Arms, is Len Wallace, a singer and accordion player. A member of Canadian Auto Workers Local Number 1, Windsor, Ontario. And now, one of the old stories. You know how they used to tell the stories around the peat fires in Ireland that would sometimes go on for two nights? I don't intend to do that. But they were the stories that bore forward the history and the life of the people. Young immigrant Joel Emanuel Hegeland learned to speak English on the tramp steamers going between Sweden, his native Sweden, and Britain, traveled with his brother. Before the turn of the century, he immigrated to the United States. Joel Emanuel Hegeland became Joseph Hillstrom, as he shortened his name, boomed all over the country, working as a machinist, working on the docks in San Pedro, living the life of a working stiff at that time, without any pension, without any Social Security, no hospitalization, no safety laws, nothing. Joined the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Wobblies. And there he became Joe Hill, working on the docks down in San Pedro, taking old songs, old hymns, and putting new words to them so that the workers had songs to sing, Preach from the Slave, Power in the Union, The White Slave, wonderful songs that are still commonly sung in Europe at labor union meetings but hardly ever heard in the United States anymore. One of the fruits of the Cold War, folks. Well, Joe Hill was another one of those framed up on a murder charge, Salt Lake City, Utah. He was framed on the murder charge of killing a grocery store owner. Well, Governor Spry, the governor of the state, had vowed to bust the IWW, the organizers, out of the state forever, and this is the way he was going to do it. Two long, crooked trials, 75,000 letters from around the world appealing for a new trial, telegrams from President Woodrow Wilson, from the Swedish ambassador, all to no avail. They were going to kill him. Well, Joe Hill was in jail there. He wrote to Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, who was in charge of raising money for his defense, said, Libba, stop spending money on me. They're going to kill me whether I'm in jail or not. He put that money to work, keeping a fighting union going, keeping the newspaper coming out. He wrote Big Bill Haywood in Chicago, the General Secretary Treasurer of the Union, and said, "Bill, don't mourn for me, but organize. Promise me one thing, Bill. When I'm dead, you'll take my body over the border into Wyoming, because I don't want to get caught dead in Utah." Some people say that his last true words, as witnessed by the reporters at the execution, it was a firing squad, say his last words were, "Ready, aim, fire," as he delivered the order for his execution in rage and impatience. And he passed a little piece of paper out to a reporter through the bars. And that was his last will. It said, "My will is easy to decide, for there is nothing to divide. My kin don't need to fuss or moan. Moss does not cling to a rolling stone. My body? If I could choose, I would to ashes it reduce, and let some merry breezes blow them to where some flowers grow. Perhaps some fading flower then might come to life and bloom again. This is my last and final will. Good luck to all of you. Joe Hill." It was November 19th, 1915. Today we have the 50th anniversary of Peekskill. Big rallies, two of them, held in New York State, little town of Peekskill, that were viciously attacked 50 years ago by the American Legion, by people enraged and inflamed by the government, the great anti-communist crusade. Many people were injured very, very badly. Let's listen to a recording from that Peekskill concert of Joe Hill, sung by Paul Robeson.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, "But Joe, you're 10 years dead." "I never died," says he. "I never died," says he. "In Salt Lake City, Joe," says I, "him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge," says Joe, "but I'm dead." Says Joe, "but I'm dead." "The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe," says I. "Takes more than guns to kill a man," says Joe, "I didn't die." Says Joe, "I didn't die." And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, "what they can never kill," went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find your hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, "but Joe, you're 10 years dead." "I never died," says he.
Paul Robeson, and a glorious voice. Now look, folks, a song about little Ernesto was killed by the Parathion, and Arturo Givinetti, and Sacco, and Vanzetti, and Joe Hill. They're all songs about people getting killed and getting killed legally. These songs in this program is not about death. These songs are, in fact, about life. They're about your life, what you're doing with your life, what you're doing with what you're selling to get through the world, your labor energy. What are you doing with it? Are you getting back the wealth that you create? Getting anywhere near the share of it that you create? Well, that's what these songs are for, and that's what this struggle is for, is to give you the tools and to give you the inspiration to be able to get together with your workmates and organize to ensure that you get back the greater portion of the wealth that you create. All wealth is created by labor, so all wealth belongs to labor. Instead of just fruitlessly plowing our best years, our best days, our best hours into their money crop. Well, let's listen to that, Malvina Reynolds and the Money Crop. And then let's go right into a woman who did something about it and listen to Faith Petrick sing the Kugelsberg National Bank.
Well, money has its own way, and money has to grow. It grows on human blood and bone, as any child would know. It's iron stuff and paper stuff with no life of its own. And so it takes its growing sap from human blood and bone. And many a child goes hungering because the wage is low. And men die on the battlefield to make the money grow. And those that take the money crop are avid without end. They plant it in the tenements to make it grow again. The little that they leave for us, it cannot be a seed. We spend it on the shoddy clothes and every daily need. We spend it in a minute, in an hour it is gone, to find its way to grow again on human blood and bone. Blood and bone.
Up the street, her house is so tidy, her house is so neat, but you'd never guess, though hard you might try, what this little old lady was doing on the sly. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. The Kugelsberg Bank had an audit one day, and I mean to tell you there was all hell to pay. She'd filched all the money in tiny amounts from 143 dormant accounts. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. Children all loved her and grown-ups would vie for a taste of her old-fashioned blueberry pie. No one suspected, not even Hank, she was juggling the books at the Kugelsberg Bank. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. She worked 20 years without a vacation. The president said that was real dedication. Concerning this statement, she remained mute. She simply smiled sweetly and piled up the loot. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white. But the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. She gave to the church, no thoughts could be higher. Her voice like an angel rang out from the choir. But from her picture window there glows no more light. She's dining in Rio Janeiro tonight. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white. But the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank.
These old songs, these old stories, why tell them? What do they mean? When I went to high school, that's about as far as I got, reading my U.S. history textbook. Well, I got the history of the ruling class. I got the history of the generals and the industrialists and the presidents who didn't get caught. How about you? I got the history of the people who own the wealth of the country, but none of the history of the people that created it, you know? So when I went out to get my first job, I went out armed with somebody else's class background. They never gave me any tools to understand or to begin to control the condition of my labor. And that was deliberate, wasn't it? Huh? They didn't want me to know this. That's why this stuff isn't taught in the history books, that we're not supposed to know it. You understand that? No. If I wanted a true history of where I came from as a member of the working class, I had to go to my elders. Many of them, their best working years before pensions or Social Security, gave their whole lives to the mines, to the wheat harvest, to the logging camps, to the railroad, got nothing for it, just fetched up on the skids, living on short money, mostly drunk all the time. But they led those extraordinary lives that can never be lived again. And in the living of them, they gave me a history that is more profound, more beautiful, more powerful, more passionate, and ultimately more useful than the best damn history book I ever read. And I've said so often before, the long memory is the most radical idea in America. Sing a song I made up for one of those. I never met him. There's one flop hotel left in Spokane, Washington called the Clem Hotel. I'd walk through the parking lot there on my way to the park. An old man sitting up there in the window, grimy window, face pale like a mask of death, gazing down at the parking lot, perfectly motionless. I'd make a point of going through there every day, and I'd wave at him. Finally, I got him so to at least lift his hand and wave a little bit. I went to the fellow at the desk in the hotel, and I said, I want to meet that man. He said, he won't let you into his room. He's afraid of the young jack rollers. He's afraid of the young ones on the street that'll knock you down for your little bit of pension money, for your little bit of VA, your food stamps. So he's got a spike ball handle behind the door, and he won't let anybody come in there, but that he'll attack you. Well, I made this song for him anyway. I don't know if it's his whole story. It's not going to be mine. I sure hope it's not going to be yours.
I spent my whole life making somebody rich. I busted my ass for that son of a bitch. And he left me to die like a dog in a ditch and told me I'm all used up. He used up my labor, he used up my time. He plundered my body and squandered my mind and gave me a pension of handouts and wine and told me I'm all used up. My kids are in hock to a god you call work, slaving their lives out for some other jerk. Yeah, my youngest in Frisco just made shipping clerk, and he don't know I'm all used up. wealthy young people reaching for power and gold, but don't have respect for anything old, for pennies they're bought and for promises sold. Someday they'll all be used up. They use up the oil, they use up the trees, they use up the air and they use up the sea. Well, how about you, friend, and how about me? What's left when we're all used up? I'll finish my life in this crummy hotel. It's lousy with bugs and my God, what a smell. But my plumbing still works and I'm clear as a bell. Don't tell me I'm all used up. Outside my window, the world passes by, gives me a handout and spits in my eye. And no one can tell me, 'cause no one knows why. I'm living, but I'm all used up. Sometimes in my dreams, I sit by a tree. My life is a book of how things used to be. And kids gather around and they listen to me. And they don't think I'm all used up. And there's songs and there's laughter and things I can do. And all that I've learned I can give back to you. I'd give my last breath just to make it come true. No, I'm not all used up. They use up the oil and they use up the trees. They use up the air and they use up the sea. Well, how about you, friend, and how about me? What's left when we're all used up?
All used up. Oh, yes. Well, make sure that doesn't happen to you, huh? It sure isn't happening to me because I'm here in community radio station here, and I'm with people that I love and like to be with, and I'm doing work that doesn't require me to have a boss. I gave up having a boss many, many years ago. Time for us to wind this down here. Probably ought to do Utah's The Old Guy's annual Labor Day address. I'll try to keep it brief, all right? You know, the academics and the economists have tried to define the working class out of existence. You know, there's no more working class, which means there's no more class struggle, which means there's no more class warfare. Well, that's balderdash. That is simply isn't true. If you're working for wages and got a boss, you're in the working class, and that struggle goes on and on to be able to care for your kids, to be able to live any kind of decent human life. The working class. When I turn my faucet, water comes out. When I flush my toilet, the poop goes away. When I go to my mailbox, the mail is sitting there. When I throw the switch, the lights go on. Eh? Work is being done. I can't do any of those things. I don't know how. And I haven't got the time or the skill to learn. All of those things. When the garbage truck shows up, the garbage goes away. I would sink in my own filth. My own waste, if somebody didn't do that work. Huh? And we honor that. That's what we do on Labor Day. We honor that. We honor the work of all the people that make our lives livable. You know? All the things that you can't do for yourself have to be done for somebody else. Now, you want to make sure that the people who do that work, essential to your life, the quality of your life, are adequately compensated for that work, better than adequately compensated. That they're well housed, that there's strong safety regulations so they don't get injured or sick on their job. They don't have to worry or fret about a kid having to go to a hospital or a long illness, you see. And when they get too old to do that kind of work anymore, that there's enough money there for them to have a dignified and a delightful retirement. Now, that's a selfish thing, you know. I want those things to be done as well as possible, and they can't be unless the people who do that work are happy, all right? And when I look out my window and see my garbage man come by, I realize that he contributes more to my quality of life than I do to his. Next time a garbage man comes, run out and ask for his autograph, okay? Let's listen to the old Almanac Singers, the first recorded version of Solidarity Forever.
Union through the workers' blood shall run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Taken untold millions that they never toil to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.
Well, thanks for giving me an opportunity to rant to you. I have no rant control, you know. This is Utah Phillips, and you'll be listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. And this from Joe Hill. If we, the workers, take a notion, we can stop all speeding trains. Every ship upon the ocean we can tie with mighty chains. Every wheel in the creation, every mine, every mill, fleets and armies of all nations will, at our command, stand still.
Loafer's Glory is produced at community radio station KVMR-FM in Nevada City, California. To write Utah Phillips, write him at Box 1235, Nevada City, California, zip code 95959, or you can call for a Loafer's Glory newsletter, 800-989-3825. Loafer's Glory comes with support from the Haitian World Fund of the Tides Foundation and support from the National Hobo Association, publishers of the Hobo Times, Box 706, Nisswa, Minnesota, 56468.